following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to The Leftovers, brought to you by the Underdog Sports Network, with Josh Dunn, Anshu Khanna, and Dan Bauer.
Hello and welcome to The Leftovers on July 27th. Happy Friday. Congrats, you made it to the weekend. Today, we have a very special guest, Steve Gardner, returns. I, of course, am Dan Bauer. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, glad to be back. I'm glad I didn't scare everyone away, and I'm glad to make my second appearance on the show.
You did not. Yeah, great job last time, so looking forward to having you back, and a perfect show to have you back for. The hot stove is burning hot today. A couple big trades the past couple days, so we'll get right into it. First big one breaking as of about 30 minutes ago from when we're recording. Cole Hamels on his way from the Rangers to the Cubs for a couple of low minor league prospects. Assuming the physicals go through, we're still waiting on exactly what prospects. Also, a buttload of cash as he is due $20 million next year, let alone what's left on his salary this year. So a lot of money left to be paid for him. So the Rangers going to essentially be eating some of that. Steve, does this make the Cubs the favorite in the National League?
I think it does. I don't think like they already were not the favorite, though. I think they coming into this trade, they were the favorite already, but I think this like solidifies them in that role. I mean, I think if you look at their lineup and you look at the way they've been playing, they're playing as well as any NL team. I know the Dodgers have been hot of late, but I still think the Cubs stack up better what they're pitching than the Dodgers do. And now you bring in Cole Hamels, who will be their number four starter, maybe even the number three, considering how inconsistent Quintana is. So yeah, I think it definitely makes them as a favorite. I mean, obviously, they're still ways behind the rest of the AL teams, but overall, they got to be the favorite going into the last 2 months here.
Well, you mentioned it right there, and we've talked about this on previous shows, that we just don't think anybody in the National League can compete with what the American League has. Is that an opinion that you share, or you think that, you know, the team like the Dodgers or the Cubs could compete with the Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, or Indians?
I just don't see it. I mean, you look at the records of the American League teams, and you have the Red Sox, who are 40 games over, and the Yankees, who are nipping at their heels, and then you have the Astros, and even the Indians are team at least have they're a lot better than a lot of the NL teams. So I just don't see how an NL team, just the way their pitching stacks up, can compete with an AL team in a seven-game series. So, I mean, I hate to say it this far out, but I just don't see it changing either.
One of those American League teams also makes a big trade here recently. J.A. Happ on his way from Toronto to the New York Yankees in exchange for third baseman Brandon Drury and outfield prospect Billy McKinney. So another one of these trades where you're getting a rental. Happ's got just a few months left on his deal, and then he'll hit free agency. So what you get in return is an outfielder in Billy McKinney, who, depending on which prospect list you look at, is either in the 20s of their top 30 prospects or not even on the list at all. So pretty below average prospect on that one in return. And also Brandon Drury, a guy who was supposed to really get a lot of time in the bigs this year, was supposed to really eat up some innings and help out a very young left side of the infield there for the Yankees as they dealt with some youth and some injury issues at the start of the year, but never really caught on. So do you think this is a fair return for J.A. Happ, and what does was Happ do to the Yankees bullpen?
Yeah, I think being a rental, I don't think that they expected to get a top-tier prospect for him. I mean, Happ was an all-star, but he also was the Blue Jays all-star, so that's really not saying a lot. I mean, he's been solid, but he's not going to win a series for you. And I think the Yankees realized that, but they also had a gaping hole as their number four starter. I mean, Sonny Gray was not getting the job done. So they needed a number four starter who could really be the guy that would be that game five or game four starter for them. So he gives them that, but I don't think that – I think the return's fair, and I think the Blue Jays were kind of mindful of that, knowing that he was going to be gone after this year regardless. So I think it's just a move that makes the Yankees a little bit more strong, but it's not going to by any means put them over the top at all, I don't think, because their rotation still is lacking in a lot of ways in terms of top-tier talent and then depth as well.
Yeah, they had Britton here in the past couple of days. We talked about in that last show for a very similar return. So you're starting to see the market develop as these next couple of weeks before the trade deadline hits of what the market is for these rental relievers. And it looks like it's essentially a couple of low-level prospects if you look at the Hap trade and the Britton trade. Settle this one for us, Steve. We argued a little bit about it on Wednesday's show here. I said I think the Indians bullpen is still better come playoff time than the Yankees bullpen. What do you think? The trades the past couple of days combined with what they got, are you more fearful if you're the Red Sox or the Astros, more fearful of going up against those top three or four guys for the Indians or the Yankees?
Well, I think it really varies. I think the Yankees have a better bullpen, but the Indians have a better rotation. So it really depends on what you're looking at. I think that the Yankees are trying to get 5 to 6 innings out of their starters, and they're hoping to turn it over to the bullpen. Well, the Indians can rely on their starters to go maybe 7 or 8 and then turn it over to their bullpen. So I think it differs. I think that the Yankees have better bullpen depth, but at the same time, that is not going to help you if you have a starter who can't make it into the fourth inning. So, and also the Yankees are looking right now at the wild card, so they are not even guaranteed more than one game in the playoffs versus the Indians, who seem pretty much in at this point for a 5-game first-round series. So I think both teams' circumstances are a lot different, but I think it just kind of varies. So the Yankees have a better bullpen, but the Indians are more just in with the rotation. So it really varies, I'd say.
With the Yankees' struggle this year, you mentioned, you know, maybe they only get a 1-game playoff. If you're, let's say you're managing the New York Yankees, who's your starter in that wild card game, some of the struggles you've seen from their starting staff?
I mean, it's got to be Severino, no question. He has been the guy for them this year. I know he's only 24, but he is having a Cy Young-like year for them. I mean, CC's been there before, and he's done that, but you got to go with the guy who's gotten you there all year, and it's got to be Severino. Now, at the moment, they'd be playing the Mariners. I know that we're still only in July, but I don't really expect things to change much. So you have King Felix and Severino. That, honestly, to me, is a very even matchup. I mean, King Felix is one of the most clutch pitchers in all of baseball. So, like I said, I know we're very far out here, but that is kind of an intriguing matchup for a 1-game playoff. I mean, if the Mariners could somehow win that, that would be pretty incredible.
A team that's not looking like they're going to make that 1-game playoff, the Washington Nationals, comes out today that the Nationals may be sellers. They're starting to reach out to teams about what they can get in return for some of their players. How surprised are you that we're at this point of the season and the Nationals are sellers? According to Jeff Pisan, that decision is going to be made here in the next week. Essentially, what happens in their weekend series is going to determine whether they're sellers or not. So how surprised are you that this is where they're at? And do you think they become sellers, or do you think they're going to make another push here to try to sneak into a wild card spot?
I think they're at a very interesting spot because they are sellers, but who are they going to give up? I mean, honestly, they don't have a lot of – they have players that are good, but they have players with large contracts, and they also have players who really – I don't really see them getting a lot of interest, to be honest. And I think they're still on the fringe. I mean, they could go on a run here and win, like, 5 or 6 games in a row and be right back in the wild card in the division race. So I don't understand the need to trade away a lot of your assets this early in the game. I mean, you still have 2 full months left, and they are, like I said, still right on the fringe of 500, so they could go on a run quite easily. So I don't necessarily see the need for the sell. I mean, I get, obviously, that they're going to be in trouble because Bryce Harper is probably not going to re-sign there next year. But at the same time, I think it's too early in the game to really concede. It's not like they're in the same division as Boston where they're looking at a 10-game deficit in the division or even the wild card for that matter. So I don't really see the need to sell given the rotation they have and the lineup they have, with a lot of guys getting healthy now as well.
You mentioned Bryce Harper. What are the chances that he is still a Washington National come the trade deadline?
I think it's pretty high. I just don't see a trade like that getting done this quickly. I feel like the Nationals want to maximize the return on him, and the team is maybe leery to trade for a guy that they know they won't be guaranteed to have next year. And I just really don't see it coming together, like I said, within the next, like, 4 days. So I'd be very shocked if he got traded, just knowing that the Nationals don't seem like they're necessarily giving up completely. And also the fact that that trade would take a while to come together, just knowing how big of an asset Bryce is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can really let him go just from you mentioned it. They're still very close, but if they do become sellers, why not? He's not going to re-sign. I don't think there's anybody who thinks he's going to re-sign in Washington. So if you're the Nationals, if I'm the GM over there, I'm trying to get rid of him, to be totally fair. What return you get, probably not much, but he's going to walk. I don't think there's any chance. Well, I guess I'll pose that question to you. Is there any chance he re-signs with the Washington Nationals?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance. I mean, that's where the team that drafted him, the team that he spent his entire career with, I don't want to say there's a 0% chance that he'll go back there, because there always is a chance. But I would say it probably isn't likely, but there is always a chance. And I think it would be interesting if, for some reason, he did get traded. Like, that might honestly reignite and spark him into the player that we know that he is and the player that he's capable of being. Like, let's say he got traded to, I don't know, I don't want to say the Yankees because, like, there's no room for him on that team, but he gets traded to a contender somewhere. Like, I don't even know who would trade for him, to be honest. But that could honestly be kind of crazy to see how his game changes and how he gets newly motivated, perhaps, if in the playoff race and a pennant race as well. Obviously, we're speculating here, but I think it would be a very interesting dynamic to see for a team to get him at your deadline.
Well, speaking of speculation, it's been a while since we've gotten to talk baseball with you. So as the summer gets later and we get closer in playoff time, I would just like to turn to your prediction mode. What do you think? What do we get for Major League Baseball division winners and also our couple of wild cards? What's your prediction for the next 2 months?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start in the AL, where it's pretty much all locked up at this point. I think, obviously, you have the Red Sox winning the division, the Yankees getting the wild card, and then in the AL West, you have the Astros winning the division, and then I believe the Mariners take the second wild card, although the A's are going on a bit of a run here to make it interesting, which I think is pretty cool because they have a variety of no-name guys who are really carrying the way for them there. And then over in the Central, obviously, the Indians have it pretty much locked up as well. So then moving over to the NL, I would have to go with, obviously, the Cubs winning the NL Central, the Dodgers winning the NL West. I got to go with the Phillies winning the NL East at this point. I think they are best positioned to make a run in the NL East. I know they're pretty much neck and neck with the Braves, and then we talked about the Nats as well. I still like the Phillies to win the division there. And then for the wild cards, there's probably about five teams, I think, that are really in the run for it. I will go with Milwaukee and Arizona winning the wild cards. I think Milwaukee is really positioned with their lineup, and they just have the best talent overall, I'd say, of any wild card team. So I like them as the first wild card. And the Diamondbacks are a team that's kind of been under the radar most of the year, and even especially the starting out here in the second half. I think they have the lineup as well, and they have a solid rotation. I know they have Greinke, and then Buchholz has been pitching well, along with a couple other guys who are really stars for them. So I think their rotation and their lineup will get them in that second wild card spot.
Interesting. So out of the wild card slots for both the American League, National League, which team out of those four you listed is most likely to end up in a World Series?
Oof. I mean, I guess you got to go with the Yankees, obviously. They have the lineup, and now they have the bullpen, and they have the pitching, obviously, to get there. I mean, I think that the Yankees could quite easily beat the Red Sox in a five-game series and obviously beat the Indians or Astros if it came down to that as well. I think the NL is a lot more interesting because any one of those teams I could see going to the World Series, the way it's kind of looking right now, there's really not one team. The Cubs obviously have the most talent, but as we've seen before, that doesn't always work when the playoffs hit. So I'd say the Yankees are by far the best wildcard team to make the World Series, but one of those other NL teams could easily make it there.
Well, speaking of the opposite of playoffs, the Cleveland Browns in the news a lot the past couple of days with a lot of different rumors and some interesting storylines that tie into them. Don't worry, listeners, I won't completely do a Homer segment here, but a lot of things interesting to talk about here. So the rumor that came out yesterday, 2 days ago, when you're finally listening to this, Dez Bryant allegedly has garnered some interest from the Browns. There might be some mutual interest back and forth, a lot of different stuff on Instagram. seems to be like how we're breaking all of our NFL news lately. So, Steve, any chance you think Dez actually lands in Cleveland? And if not in Cleveland, most likely landing spot for him?
That's a tough one. I can see, I think a lot is contingent on the Josh Gordon situation. I mean, that seems like they're keeping that pretty close to the vest. But I think a situation where he's going to be out for multiple weeks, that they very well could sign him. I think that he'd be a good fit for their offense, and I think he gets an upgrade over Corey Coleman, although anyone is an upgrade over Corey Coleman. I don't know where he's been tied to so many teams at this point, and I think a lot of teams are leery of bringing him in at this point in the season. There's still obviously the entire training camp to go through, but I think that a lot of teams are just kind of hesitant because they know his attitude and they know his ego, and they just don't want to really rock the boat so much so. But I think the Browns, if any team, would have the need for him with that void of Josh Gordon potentially weighing on them for many weeks of the season.
The other name tied to them via Instagram, Earl Thomas, put a picture up on Instagram of him in Cleveland here the other night. Very interesting scenario. He has told this, or allegedly told the Seahawks, he will sit out, prepared to sit out regular season games without a new deal. And if he doesn't get a new deal, he wants traded. So a lot of very interesting things at play there. Obviously, the Browns can't be talking to him without violating NFL tampering rules unless the Seahawks have given Earl Thomas permission. But, you know, there's a very real possibility they have given Earl Thomas and his agent permission to talk to other teams to see what they could get in return. So you obviously know plenty about the Browns roster. You're a big Bengals guy. What do you think it would take to give up for Earl Thomas to end up in Cleveland? And if you don't think he's going to end up in Cleveland, what just kind of in general do you think a team is going to have to give to Seattle to move Earl Thomas over?
Well, I think the Browns of any team have the most assets to give up. I think they have a lot of young talent and, of course, a lot of draft picks. You know, I mean, they've been stockpiling picks now for years, it seems. So I think that's honestly what the Seahawks are going to need, whether it be a first-round pick or multiple round picks that it's going to take to get him off of the Seahawks squad. And the Seahawks are in a very odd position for them because they're rebuilding now after years of really kind of dominating the division. They don't have the talent around Russell Wilson anymore, and the defense is a shell of what it used to be when they had their Legion of Doom or whatever they called it. So I think the Browns of any
Legion of Boom.
The Browns have the assets available for trade, but I just don't know if it will come to fruition. I think a lot of this is like the speculative NFL training camp talk. I also think that the Cowboys are very much in the works as well, just knowing his connection to Dallas. He, I think, literally said to Jerry Jones after a game last year, come and get me. So I think the Cowboys are always a possibility, and Jerry Jones has always been very willing to give up a house for players that he really likes and players that he wants to have on his team. So I think either one of those teams could definitely make a play for Thomas, just knowing the assets they have and also desperation that the Cowboys have, for example.
So you danced around a little bit. Do you think it is going to take a first-round pick in order to get him?
Yeah, I do. I think, I mean, Seattle really has nothing to lose at this point because if they don't, he doesn't show up, then, I mean, it's really a non-factor. So I think it would take a first-round pick for him to – because right now, they're not really in a place to win anyway. So it's like, if he's not there, what's that really going to do for them? So I think it'll take that for sure to get him off of their team.
Yeah, I just don't know realistically if that's possible. He's got 1 year left on a deal. I mean, for anybody to give up a first-round pick, the only way that happens is if there's a contract extension in place before you give up a first-round pick. And you can't give up a first-round pick for 1 year. One-year deal. So, I mean, it will be interesting to keep an eye on that. I'd be all for it. Browns have been adding defensive backs like crazy. I'm pretty sure we got about 50 of them at report for training camp today. So hopefully we can at least find four halfway decent ones to play for us this year. But speaking of defensive backs who might play for the Browns, Adam Pac-Man Jones, a guy very close to your heart as a Bengals fan, had a workout with the team. Do you see him ending up in Cleveland or playing in an NFL uniform anywhere this year?
I do not. I think that it was a favor by Hugh Jackson to a former Bengal. I'm sure they were close when he was with the Bengals. And if I'm a Browns fan, I'm hoping that's all it is. I mean, Pac-Man's on his last legs. He has clearly had some issues in the past on and off the field. And the Browns have a variety of DBs already in place, a lot of young DBs in place. So, one, I don't want him taking their snaps. And two, I don't want him mentoring them. So, I get why they brought him in as a favor, but other than that, I don't really see him on the Browns or any team this year.
Yeah, I'd have to. As much as I hate to agree with you, Steve, I think I'm going to have to on that one. But we're getting right to that magic 20-minute mark or so right now, so we'll do our oh, by the ways, and then we'll let you get going. I actually have two, so I'll get started. Steve, you can get yours ready to go. But I have two to make up for our missing of Josh Nachi. We miss you, boys. Hopefully you're having fun as you listen to this on Friday. But first one is the MLB Pipeline midseason top 30 prospects list came out for each team. So if you're a big MLB prospect nerd, make sure you check those out. List for all 30 teams of who all of their top 30 prospects are. So check that one out. And then the other little piece of news that we neglected to talk about and kind of just missed on our last show, Vince Carter signs a one-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks. So former Air Canada becomes Air Atlanta. It will be fun to see him play for one more year. And I'll kick this to Steve, and I'll let you transition to your, oh, by the way. How long can Vince Carter continue to play in the National Basketball Association?
I mean, the guy is quite a career. I mean, it's pretty amazing that he has outlasted all the guys in his draft class by many a year, and he's still going strong. So props to Vince for keeping it going. Mayo, by the way, I kind of alluded to it earlier. We'll go back to baseball for a minute. And it's the Oakland Athletics. They're a team that I think that when I looked at their roster the other day, I didn't recognize more than three players on the team. And here they are at the end of July, and they're almost 15 games over 500. They came back from 10-1 down to the Rangers the other night. And they're a team that really is having, it seems like a lot of fun, is playing under the radar with all 15 A's fans there. So I think it's a fun, very under-the-radar story going on in baseball this year is how well they're playing. I mean, look at the rotation. They have Brett Anderson, Trevor Cahill, Edwin Jackson. I mean, these are guys that have been on half teams in all of baseball, and they are succeeding in a division and even in the AL. If they were in the NL right now, they'd be a playoff team. So that's pretty crazy that they are doing it with a bunch of no-name and retread players, including Chris Davis, the former Brewer player who's been on a tear with home runs of late. So it's a fun story to watch. I don't see them making the playoffs, but I think it would be really cool if they got into a one-game playoff against the Yankees, for example. And it's basically like the David versus Goliath story, to be honest, because the Athletics are a truly underdog story this year.
Well, true underdog story from another great episode of The Leftovers from the Underdog Sports. Steve, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Fun, as always, to talk some baseball with you.
Yeah, it was great to be on. Thanks a lot.
You are welcome. Well, for Steve Gardner, I am Dan Bauer, and I'll give a shout-out to Machi Khan and Josh for them as well. Hey, we hope you guys all have a great weekend. Thanks, as always, for checking out The Leftovers. Be sure to keep doing all those awesome things of rating, reviewing, telling your friends about the show, and all the great shows on the Underdog Sports Network. So we will catch you all on Monday. Have a great weekend. See you guys.